Let's go to bookmarks. And today's guest is someone with a gift for bringing people together and gently getting people to find ways to make the world a better place. He can speak five languages, including te reo Māori. He can compose waiata and apparently sing like a Viennese choir boy in Māori. It's Race Relations Commissioner and former Gisborne Mayor Meng Foon. Hello.
Kia ora, Gis. I'm just wondering if you got reached to Gisborne with the name Mulligan.
None of my Mulligans are in Gisborne. There are Mulligans in around Ashburton and originally from sort of just north of Christchurch, I believe. Sorry to say.
Yeah.
I would love you some Gisborne whakapapa.
Yeah, you never know. Never know.
Hey, how is your bubble, Meng?
My bubble?
Yeah.
It's not burst yet, so pretty good. We've been behaving ourselves. We might go for a neighbourhood, around the neighbourhood walk today just to get some fresh air. But lots of gardening and directions from my good lady, doing bits and pieces around the home, but still working.
Yeah.
So, and then it's interesting, you know, learning more about the Zoom and Skype and making sure that they work at times.
Yeah.
Since we can't see each other.
Did we not manage to make the Skype call happen for you today, Meng?
Oh, I don't know. It doesn't matter. We're here now.
Yeah, there's been a few missed connections. Can I just ask you about your phone line? Because you're just sounding a little bit muffled for me. I'm not sure if there's anything you can do to make sure that your mouth is pointing directly at the mouthpiece and...
Is that better?
It's way better. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, I'll hold this mic close to my mouth. It's actually my earpiece.
Hey, your job is to play DJ today, as well as tell us about a few of your favourite things. So, would you tell us about the first track? It's a Chinese song.
Yeah. What was that? Ten Wong Ji Wong.
Yeah.
Ten Wong Ji Wong is about the Sky King. And it's probably one of the very first modern Chinese songs, or actually Chinese movies, that actually came to New Zealand. A lot of people actually had it on tape those days, and they used to tape it and share it around, break all copyrights.
Yeah.
And DVDs came out later. And it was sort of like watched by hundreds, if not thousands, of families in New Zealand as a modern film of, that was based in Shanghai, actually. And it was all about gambling, love, murder, swapping wives, and gamble, casinos and that sort of stuff, and how empires were built and gangs, and so it was quite fascinating. And it probably is one of those films that will be remembered by my generation, as our parents actually watched it. So Ten Wong Ji Wong, and this is a beautiful theme song that actually comes out of it.
Yeah, what was the name of the movie, sorry?
I think the movie was actually called Ten Wong Ji Wong.
Oh, yeah. And and it was played on TV?
Yeah, no, it was actually videotapes those days, VHSs and betas, and one or two of the Chinese people would have imported them from China, Hong Kong.
Yeah, okay.
And then suddenly, you know what, copywriters, everybody says, oh, yeah, we can actually dub this and dub this and, and dub.
And it got passed around, and so the song must have quite strong nostalgia value for you.
Oh, yeah, it's a nice song too, and I've sung it once or twice at Chinese functions in terms of supporting the speeches that we make after that. But it was appropriate for those situations. Like one of my good friends, who Susan Louis, she does lead crystal glassware. She made these authentic Chinese shapes in shapes of Chinese vegetables.
Yeah.
And also bowls, the stuff that you go to Yum Cha with. And she made one of Yin and Yang, and that was displayed at the Tairau Whiti Museum. And I gave my speech in Chinese and sang this particular song to match it.
Great. Let's play it. Here it comes.
Mm.
Thank you. RNZ National. Enjoyed that. Tian Wang Ji Wang. It's a song chosen by Race Relations Commissioner Meng Foon, who is our guest on Bookmarks today. And so you talked about singing in Chinese, and I'd love to get the story of how you ended up speaking Te Reo Māori, Meng, and I think it involves going back to your childhood.
We were fortunate that we had a shop, and we had a large market garden, and was actually surrounded by a lot of local history of Matawhero and Makaraka at those days. And the interesting thing was that I had genetically, I just sort of realised that 10 years ago, genetically I had a interest in learning different languages, and I used to mimic our customers that actually come to the shop. So if it was a Māori speaker and they spoke Māori to us, I would actually say exactly the same thing in their tone.
Yeah.
And if they said, oh, you know, he piro ngā parareka, I said, well, he piro ngā parareka, ai. Those potatoes are rotten. And they used to have us on. And if an Englishman came to the shop, and they used to say top of the morning to you, and I would say top of the morning to you too, sir. And so it was sort of not mocking, but mimicking. I like the sound of the different tones of language, and so hence I started speaking quite early in Te Reo Māori, and I found it at school, at Makaraka School, that my, you know, Chinese was our first language, and went to school and didn't speak any English, I don't know, till 6 or 7. And I found out that my Māori friends, that they didn't actually speak Māori at home, which was quite a disappointment for me and sad for me, because they said they used to get the strap, and I did not actually understand why would you get the strap, the parents get the strap at school, or had to write 1,000 lines, the hey diddle diddle, the cat and the fiddle. However, my interest in Māori came from there, and our customers were very supportive. Josh Stewart and Taranaki Paratene and Dutene Irwin, and all those people used to come to the shop, and they used to speak to me, and they used to encourage me. And then interestingly enough, when I went to intermediate, there was zero. Definitely Makaraka School, our teacher nurtured us with Hemi Bennett. and all the ladies of the school. And then it came to the last day of Gisborne Intermediate, and our form teacher, Hudi Callaghan, said, "Boys and girls, there's Māori classes at Gisborne Boys High School and Gisborne Girls High School, and if you want to take it up, there's an option for you." And I thought, oh, at least I'll pass one subject, because I knew that all my Māori friends didn't speak Māori at all. And so I took that up, and to the great disappointment of my mother, her first breath was this. She said, "Sai johi," which means waste of breath. Hmm. And another term means waste of time. But as time went on, when I became the mayor, and I said, "Hey, waste of time, eh, Mum?"
And your family was, nonetheless, was quite connected, though. I think your dad was pretty generous to the local Māori community.
Yeah, my family, my mum and dad, were very generous. Reciprocity is a huge thing in Chinese culture, and as within a lot of cultures, and anybody that supported us got supported back. And there was a couple of times. So in terms of, you know, whenever there was a funeral, a tangihanga, my dad would take a truckload of vegetables, potatoes, pumpkins or cabbages and onions to the tangi, and would drop it off at the back door of the marae, at the kauta in the kitchen. And, you know, interesting that those days we were only allowed to open 5.5 days was in town and 6 days at the veggie shop. And our customers actually lobbied us to see if we could actually open 7 days, because we had a lot of shearers and farming corporations and farmers that actually bought produce from us, but more particularly the shearers, because they wanted to actually prepare their stocks on Sunday so they can actually get on with the job on Monday. And so they all signed a petition, and we sent that petition to the Labor Department, and the Labor Department, I think it was Al Simon, he agreed that Mum and Dad can have their shop open 7 days. So we were one of the very first veggie shops to open 7 days in the whole of New Zealand.
I'm speaking with Meng Foon, who is Race Relations Commissioner and also my guest on Bookmarks today. And so do you, it might not be easy to answer this question, but do you believe that your knowledge of te reo Māori has given you particular insights in your role as Race Relations Commissioner, and before that as Mayor, I suppose, of a predominantly Māori district, but does it give you a special sort of knowledge of maybe what the people you're dealing with are going through, or how they view the world?
Oh, absolutely, Jess. I think that's imperative. My upbringing with Māori families, with us in business, have definitely given me insight, and more particularly living with our whānau in the Te Rā Whiti, and always been mentored by our whānau in the Te Rā Whiti. But the language is so important. Knowing the language and how people think is imperative to the success of my roles. And I would say, look, quite frankly, if I didn't actually have any language language or knowledge of Māori things, I would not be the mayor of the Te Rā Whiti. Just as simple as that. And I don't think I would have actually, I know that I wouldn't be the Race Relations Commissioner if I didn't have that outlook and understanding of the Māori worldview. And so those are just key attributes that I've gained over the years. And I just want to acknowledge all my uncles and aunties out there that have given me this opportunity to be part of their families. So, you know, when you participate in the Māori world, it's not just the business side, but it's all the social side as well. All at the funerals, tangihanga, when people get married, the marima, opening of buildings, launches of books, memorial services of the 28 Battalion in our place. Interesting enough, when the local Tūta Mana Maudia was going to the Shanghai Expo, or the World Expo in Shanghai, they said, "Meng, we would love to learn a Chinese song to actually support our group going over there." And I went over to the marae at Whakatoa and Lorraine there, and I said, "Well, here's a song that I think is appropriate for whatever the occasion is, when you finish your speeches or your rangatira, finish your speeches, you can sing this song. And the song is "The Moon Lights Up My Heart." And the reception they got was actually incredible. That here's a Māori group that came from the Te Rāwhiti, yeah, came from New Zealand, and knew a Chinese song. And so immediately they were more more received than if you didn't. So there was definitely that cultural understanding, taking the time to actually learn one's culture and understand one's culture and to live the culture is very important. So, yeah, definitely, Jess.
Hey, I'm keen to hear some of your favourite things. That's our bookmarks tradition. But first, let's play a song, and you've chosen one by Frank Sinatra.
Mm.
How come?
Oh, I love it. Well, first of all, I love Blue Eyes. Frank Sinatra is an entertainer. He's got a number of great songs that he's produced and sung throughout. But this particular one I love, My Way. I tend to sometimes have my way, sometimes, very seldom. But when I do celebrate it. But it's not only that, but it's actually, the song actually sort of like gives you that self-determination, like Māorism, you know, that mana motu hake, that we are or who we are, and we're allowed to actually celebrate who we are.
And, you think my way might be shorthand for tino rangatiratanga?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. being proud of yourselves and being able to celebrate and acknowledge yourself is important, because who else is going to celebrate you? The other, I remember going to Dean Witters, who was an entrepreneur in Gisborne here, and he passed away. He's the guy that started Rhythm and Vines and Sedenta and a number of other businesses in Gisborne that are legacies for the Gisborne district. And the family asked me to speak because I've had a relationship with them for about 40, 50 years. And so I thought, oh, yeah, I think I'll try my way. And because I actually didn't say my way, because Dean had his way. And so I changed my to his. And so, no, it was really appropriate for nice the sending of Dean.
Okay, let's...
But it's one of my favourite karaoke ones.
Okay. Here comes part of it now, Frank Sinatra and My Way.
And now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear, I'll state my case, which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full. I traveled each and every highway and more, much more than this. I did it my way. Regret, I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I did what I had to do, saw it through without exemption. I planned each charted course, each careful step along the byway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times, I'm sure you knew, when I bit off more than I could chew. But through it all, when there was doubt, I ate it up and spit it out. I faced it all and I stood tall. share of losing. And now, as tears subside, I find it all so amusing to think I did all that. And may I say, not in a shy way, oh no, oh no, not me. I did it my way.
RNZ National, Frank Sinatra and My Way, chosen by Meng Foon, our Bookmarks guest. So tell me about books, Meng. Do you get much reading time?
Well, I have to read agendas, and that's probably one of the very few things I read. I do like listening to things. I like listening to the news, and I like listening to the financial news or CNBC or Sky News and that sort of stuff, because I like to keep in touch with the share market.
Yeah, what's your read on what's going on at the moment?
Well, I think there's it's got a little while to go because there's pandemic all over the world. I think New Zealand's doing a great job in terms of the Prime Minister's direction and leadership. And New York's the pandemic now, and it was China, Italy, Spain, and now it's moved over to New York. And when the states get hit hard, the market continues to go down. And, I mean, oil, I remember oil being nearly $200 a barrel, and now it's only about $20 a barrel. It's just incredible, Jeff.
Yeah.
And so, I read my agendas, and I do a bit of research on philosophies and words that I don't understand, and which Google is fantastic, and you just touch the word and it goes look up and you find the meaning of those particular words, because this is a whole new arena for me in terms of acronyms and new words of whatever the human rights bill of rights and the human rights are all involved in. So, yeah. Right.
You have read a book called The Long Walk by Polish Army Lieutenant Sławomir Rawicz. Can you tell us about that book?
Yeah, interesting, and I always thought it was Alexander Solzhenitsyn, but it is Sławomir. And I just enjoyed that journey when they were in the prison camps in Russia, and, cold as anything, and they escaped and they went over to they crossed the hills over to Tibet and over the deserts and into other countries. And it's just like, wow, what an incredible journey. And I said, anybody that actually read that book will think, right, my life is not that bad. I can do this. It just makes it so much, that showed just so much determination. And I enjoyed every moment of that. In actual fact, it's one of the very few books that I've read, because normally we were into Donald Duck and Mick Scrooge and and the Phantom and all those sort of things. But
really loved comics. You loved comics when you were little.
Oh, I love them. Yeah, we used to buy comics all the time, and we used to have the Beagle Boys. Well, Beagle Boys were good. And Mick Scrooge, he was always unhappy and extorted his money. And then there was the Phantom and the Hulk and just all those comics. It was just I'm more of a picture person, so I can actually see more in the actions than in the words. And so looking at pictures was fantastic for me. And, my son, he likes pictures as well, and he's created a comic himself. And so, pictures are great.
Yeah. Do you like to go to museums, galleries, and look at works of art?
I do, actually. I do like museums more than galleries. I've been to some pretty good galleries like Van Gogh and what's the one that starts with R? And they... you sort of get through them, but they all seem similar after a while.
Yeah.
You get lots of pieces of, Greek work and Greek carvings, and you know, after you've seen one carving, you've seen the whole lot. They're similar to churches, but museums they display the culture and the history in different forms. And I like going to small regional museums because they tell the local history, and I love the local history. You know, you go to shanty town in, I think it's in Hokitika, and they've even got all the buildings that are there, and all the stories of where the buildings actually came from. And then you can go on a little train and go out to the gold mine and mine for gold. Go out to Lawrence and have a look at the live museums. You know, in actual fact, there are more museums than people think. So every marae in the country, which we have 87 here in the Te Rāwhiti, they are living museums of their own. And you go in there, and when you listen to the stories of their particular marae and hapu and iwi, it's just amazing. And then you got all the, not only the carvings, but all the pictures of the photos of the people that have passed on and their roles and attributes to the marae. And so Te Rāwhiti Museum is another great museum in New Zealand. It's been voted regional museum, in top regional museum in New Zealand. And so if you go in there, they're telling stories. But now we're actually starting to tell stories out in the place-based stories, so where the story actually happens. So a lot of stories happen in Titirangi, Kopututia in our region, up at Hikurangi. They built Whakairo, Māori Whakairo, telling the stories of Māori and his attributes during those days. So I love museums.
So how did a son of a greengrocer with an interest in languages end up getting into politics?
Interesting story. You know, I always like to give something a go, even if I don't know what it is. You know, probably best to know what the end result or what the job is going to be. Always a bit of a risk taker. And so we bought a shopping centre during the last downturn in the share market around about 2008.
Yeah.
And we built a community police station. I used to have cups of tea with the policemen there, Alan Davidson and Hemi Hikawai. And Hemi Hikawai was actually on the council at that time, one of the very few policemen with two purple ribbons acknowledged by the police in terms of his work. And he said, "Lee, you should be a councillor." And I said, "Mate, I wouldn't even know what you fellas do." And he said, "Well, I'll tell you what, one thing that's good food is lunch." And I said, "Oh, yeah, okay." But he also told me that the current councillor in the Pāti Teruhiru ward, Owen Pinching, was retiring and that he was willing to mentor me. And so I took up the challenge and I said, "Yeah, I could actually give it a go anyway." And my parents were all a bit hesitant because losing and being out in the public wasn't a Chinese thing those days. And so I said, "Oh, bugger what my parents say," and give it a go. And I had the opportunity to stand in the city ward or the country ward. And I said, "I think I'll do the country ward because there are less houses there and less doors to knock on." And so there's 2,500 as opposed to about 13,000.
Yeah.
And I had this thought, you know, and I thought, "Oh, would they vote for a Chinese person?" When I topped the polls in the Pāti Teruhiru ward, I had no doubt that when you choose people, it's not about race, it's about the attributes of that person.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm talking to Meng Foon, by the way, who's in for Bookmarks. Can you recommend us a couple of movies, Meng?
Yeah, no, I love James Bond movies and Bruce Lee movies. I think one of the things, and you know, I'm looking back now, and one of the things that Bruce Lee movies actually did was actually give New Zealanders a lot more respect for Chinese people.
Uh-huh.
Those days we had, you know, a few of us had fun poked at us. But when the Bruce Lee movies came in, people had this perception that, all these Chinese people must learn kung fu at home. And so there was less bantering out on the streets and at school, and there was this respect of, oh, you guys do this and do that, and we'd love to learn. And then, you know, there was a whole lot of kung fu schools actually set up, and lots of people learned how to use the nunchuckers and imitate the sounds of Bruce Lee going, ooh. And so, you know, so I think that Bruce Lee movies actually helped our race relations in New Zealand at that time. And James Bond movies, as soon as a James Bond movie came out, off we go to the movies with mum and dad. There was line up at the King's Theatre or the Majestic Theatre, wherever they were held, showing, and full houses, you know, and just fascinating, all those little gadgets of cameras and little phones and the flick knife out of the shoe and how the seat ejected out. And now it's all reality now, Jess. You know, you can actually have a camera the size of your hand or even smaller from a personal point of view. And all those big phones have become little phones, and we've got them now. And so we're sort of living the dreams of James Bond.
The one thing I wanted to mention before we run out of time is the social enterprise market garden that you've started up. Can you tell us a bit about this?
Yeah, been the mayor for a long time, you know, and we always talk about encouraging employment, but the employment rate still is there. And so about 4 or 5 years ago, I said, look, action is more than words. So I set up a charitable trust, got a few trustees along with similar dreams, and set up the Aotearoa Social Enterprise Trust, which we actually put people into work. And so we've been very successful. I think we've put probably about 400 or 500 people into work in Te Rāwhiti over the last few years. We have a couple of contracts as well with Rangatahi, and also outcomes with WINS. And we started up a garden, and that helps as part of the social enterprise as well. So, you know, we give people 10 chances to get to work because, you know, it's no different to starting to run a marathon. So if you're starting to run a marathon, you might run a couple of Ks a day and start building up. And the same with people that have been on the dole for a while, and they need to get used to getting up and getting to work. And if they feel tired at work, we say, mate, you go home, come back tomorrow, they might do another couple of hours, come back tomorrow, have a day off, whatever. And with a normal employer, can't actually do that. So we actually train them up and school them up to actually have regularity, get all their bank account IOD, get their tests and health checks, drug testing and all that, get them work ready. And then we place them into the workforce, and they generally have done well. They've been air hostess, working the primary industries.
You're teaching them the culture of work, huh?
The culture of work, yeah, absolutely. And they love it. I mean, and the thing that we found out is that the younger they are, the easier it is, because they haven't got into that stream of dependency on the dole. But once these young people, you know, 17, 18, 19, they get the paycheck and they say, oh, this is pretty good. And they're actually keen, and they're great leaders in the workforce for their families, because some of their families, you know, they're held back by their families. They're, what the hell are you going to work for? It's a waste of bloody time, you know. But
is it the sort of thing that could roll out New Zealand wide? It sounds pretty encouraging.
It's a project that we do have a dream to roll out right throughout New Zealand, but we're getting Te Rāwhiti right first. But there are many other models around New Zealand, but we're very pleased to have reports from MSD and Potama, Rangatahi, Willie Jackson, and them saying that, mate, you fellas are doing great, and we're probably in the top 3 or 4 in the whole country.
Do you see yourself as devoting your life to service? Is that something that you wake up each morning and think, how am I going to help my community? Or is it less sort of worthy than that? Are you just doing kind of the next thing that feels right?
Oh, no, no. I look back at my life and I said I've been in the serving our community since I was a child. So we served in the shop, then we served in our business arena, served on the council as a councillor and then as the mayor. And I continue to be fortunate to be appointed to the Race Relations Commission's job and continue to serve. And serving to make a difference and to encourage our communities to serve as well. And I think that's a great thing for our nation to actually continue us to serve. And I acknowledge the number of volunteers that's out there in our community that day in and day out, they go to do their voluntary work, not expecting any recognition for their work, but they do it because they love to progress people's lives and they love to help people in their lives when they are in difficulty.
It's a pleasure to spend some time with you. Thanks so much, Meng.
Thank you, Jess. And it was a great pleasure to talk to you and to your listeners. Noho ora mai koutou, e whakarongo mai nei ki tēnei te irirangi o tātou Aotearoa. And if you're ever free, come to Gisborne and stay.
Kia ora, we're going to finish with a track that you composed called Tū Mai, which you wrote for the Ngāti Porō leader, Dr. Aperana Mahuika. Here it comes.
Ngā hikurangi e mau ngā tā.